what do I need to do to make sure that an exercise is safe? It's not going to hurt me, not going to hurt my client, not going to hurt my athlete, and it's going to be effective. How do I know that the exercise that I'm doing is going to give me the best results possible in the shortest period of time, in the safest way possible? What a great question. Haha. So even if you don't have in-depth understanding of anatomy and physiology, and there's probably a better question there, should I, as an exercise professional or as a coach, as somebody who's sharing information about exercise with people, should I have a really good understanding of how the human body works, the anatomy and physiology of the internal body systems, so that I can make sure for myself, that I can analyze for myself all the exercises, and there's millions of them, and there's plenty of people who sincerely and passionately share that an exercise is safe or effective, or you should do it, or you'll get results from it, or it'll burn fat, or it'll work. But could those people be sincerely and passionately wrong if they don't know their anatomy and physiology? Is it possible that there are lots of people giving out information about exercise who might be just regurgitating or repeating somebody else's opinion? They've become the expert in somebody else's opinion, or they're just following the crowd, the fashion. They're just doing what everybody else is doing. If you go to a gym and everybody's doing an exercise, it's interesting how quickly everybody starts doing that same exercise. And I'll give you a really fun example of that. I had a client who was a rock climber, and she had some inflamed wrist extensors. So she found it difficult to do her chin-ups and her rows and anything to do with holding on to something and pulling in the more effective supinated position. But she found it quite comfortable in the pronated position, but it was only one hand. It wasn't the other hand. So we did her chins and her rows and her lat pull-downs and all the things where she was pushing or pulling. We did them with a pronated grip just on one side. And it was interesting, it wasn't long before all the trainers on my team, and at that time I think I had, and I'm going to say 10, there might have been more than that, but everybody was giving their clients exercises with one hand supinated and one hand pronated. And of course, me as the team leader asked the question at the team meeting, what's this all about? And the answer was quite embarrassing. Of course, we're doing it because you're doing it. There was no technical reason. Nobody had thought about, I wonder why Rowie's doing that. Nobody asked me why we were doing that. They just thought, oh, Rowie's got a new exercise, so I'm going to copy. I'm sharing that with you because it's human nature. If we see something enough and we see enough people doing it, there's that great quote, 50 million people doing a dumb thing doesn't mean it's not a dumb thing. So what I'm asking is, how do we analyze an exercise for whether or not it's safe? And is there a set of rules or a set of ideas or something that's scientifically or fundamentally, anatomically, physiologically sound? And could it be this simple? If the body's in the upright position, could it be more effective? And I'll just give you, there's three things that I always find really exciting about the upright position. Number one, of course, the human body was designed to be upright. We have two legs for a reason. We don't have four. And we have legs, which means we don't need to be lying on the ground or sliding around on the ground or slithering. There's a good word. So the upright position seems to be the functional position for a human being. That's the way we're designed to move around. Then there's the question I'll ask the question, do we burn more calories in the upright position? And the answer to that, from all the research that I've seen from some of the best universities in the world, is that it takes more energy to be in the upright position. And just from a common sense point of view, why do people sit down? Oh, I've got to sit down, I'm tired. Because obviously it takes more energy to stand up. So if we're in the upright position, we're going to burn more energy. In exercise terminology, that means burn more calories, use up more energy, be more lean. There's a good one. So according to, depending on which research study you read, up to 7% more calories just by being in the upright position. So there's a really good reason for me. I used to have a standing desk. Now I've got a tread desk so that I'm never sitting down. If you have a look at the human body and the way it's designed, it was never designed to be bent in the middle. It was never designed to sit. We work or function very effectively in the upright position, and we sleep very well in the lying down position, so horizontal and vertical. This half and half seems very odd. So what a great thing to consider is that we spend more energy in the upright position. We're designed to be in the upright position. And if you want to work as functionally as possible so that everything is and your posture and all of your internal organs are situated in the right spot, then anything that's sitting or lying down, it just doesn't seem to make any sense. So, great question. If I'm in the upright position, would an exercise be better? So it's more functional, I'm going to burn more calories. Here's a really cool thing. The brain works 7% better in the upright position. Now, those numbers, I don't know where the percentages come from. I'm not the researcher that did the studies. I just read the studies and go, wow, that's exciting. But does it make sense? If it requires more energy to be in the upright position, would the brain then have to work harder, send out more electrical impulses to be in the upright position? So we actually, again, burn more calories, but our brain functions better because we haven't got that bend in the middle. And if we're lying down, perhaps that's our brain saying it's time to go sleeping. So when we're in the upright position, our brain works better. So if we were to exercise the body in the upright position, could that be a better position? If you then have a look at forces that go through joints, and the reason I ask that question is it possible that if we put excessive pressure through joints, whether it's too many times or putting the joint in the wrong position, could that cause or be the cause for immediate injury or future injury? And as an exercise professional, we know that our number one rule is to never hurt our client. But if my client is injured in any way, shape, or form, they can't exercise anyway. So why would I want to do anything to put my client's body at risk, put my athlete's body at risk? I'll ask the question, why would I want to put my own body at risk by putting it into a position where there could be the wrong forces going through the joints? So once again, if you're in the upright position, you've now got compression forces going through all your joints. So gravity's pushing down on your body. So I always look at it this way. If I'm standing up, and you have a look now at all the joints. So your arms are by your side and you're in the upright position. Gravity's pushing through your spine. Gravity's pushing through your shoulder. Gravity's pushing through your elbow, through your wrist, through your hips, through your back, through your spine, lower back, through your knees, through your feet, through. So the pressure's going through the joint. If I put a bend in my body in any way, shape, or form, so if I bend my arm, I bend my leg, I bend my back, I'm now putting my body in a position where gravity will be pushing across my joint. So if I hold my arm out in front of me, for example, I now have gravity going across my joint. If I put my leg out in front of me, I've now got gravity going across my knee joint. And then if you combine that with a seated position, so you've got gravity pushing through your spine into a seated, well, a bended position. And I'll use that as an example. If I'm straight and upright or straight and vertical or horizontal, I've got my body is straight. As soon as I put a bend in my body, I now have the risk, the chance that I'm going to put shearing forces across some or all of my joints. So shearing simply means, and just by the sound, it doesn't sound good to me, but I don't want to wear my joints away. If I've got pressure going through the joint, and we always use the example here at Maxi, if I put two pieces of wood together, even if there's a piece of sandpaper in between those two pieces of wood, if I push hard, if I push really hard, if I push really, really hard, I've just got a force going through the two pieces of wood. But if I then push those two pieces of wood across each other with a piece of sandpaper in between, I'll now wear the wood away. Now, it might take a long time to wear all the wood away, but it will slowly and very effectively wear down the wood. Well, that's what happens in a shearing force. If I've got gravity going across my joint, my body's now fighting against gravity. So I've put the wrong kind of force through the joint, which of course, then we need to have a look at all the exercises where we've got bendy bits against gravity. So that's bicep curls, tricep kickbacks, leg extensions, leg curls, sit-ups, anything to do with the shoulder. And that's a really interesting one because if I've got something in my hand and it's heavy and I'm holding onto it with my arms by my side, I've got a traction force going through my shoulder. If I push above my head, one could say I've got a compression force going through the shoulder. But the challenge with the shoulder joint, of course, is very shallow. The humerus is a really big bone, as we know. The cavity that holds that big bone into my body is very shallow. And the four little pieces of material that hold that in there, the supraspinatus, infraspinatus, teres minor and subscapularis, which are your rotator cuff muscles, the little tiny muscles that hold that big bone into a shallow cavity. You can imagine that they don't take much force to break. And if you start rotating them, overusing them and or putting shearing forces through them, you could get a shoulder injury pretty quickly. And if you have a look at any of the sports that have a shearing force action through the shoulder joint, you'll notice that they are very prone to injury. So swimmers and kayakers and baseball throwers all have real challenges with shoulder injuries. So if my athlete's doing a sport that's already prone to giving them an injury, whether it's their shoulder, their elbow, their lower back, their hips, their knees, I don't want to give them that in training, obviously. I don't want to give that to my client because I don't want to give them any risk of hurting themselves, which means they wouldn't be able to exercise. So would it be a really good idea just to keep the body in the upright position and make sure that there's no shearing forces going across any joints? So if the pressure's going through the joint or pulling through the joint, so traction or compression forces, is far more functional, of course, for how the human body works than if I bend it in any way. So straight works. The challenge, of course, with that shoulder, and I'll just go a step further, if I put my arm above my head and I've got a weight at the end of a long lever, if I put my arm out in front of my body, out to the side of my body or the back of my body, and I've got a weight at the end of a long lever, is it possible now that I've got some serious shearing forces going across my shoulder? Some people talk about shoulder presses. Now I'm going up above my head. There's two challenges with that, if I can just ask the question. How often do we put or lift something and put it above our head? And if you look at a workplace health and safety point of view, most businesses, construction sites, warehousing, any kind of lifting where you have to put something above your head, it's not just strongly recommended, it becomes a legal challenge if you're forcing people to lift a weight above their head, because it puts so much challenge through their shoulder and their upper back, for some people their lower back, and they could get injured. We don't do it on a regular basis in real life. We might put a pillow in the cupboard above our head. We might put a can of soup in the pantry above our head, but it's one time and it's usually light. That shoulder joint is very shallow. I'll share it again. And those four little rotator cuffs, and of course we should know them, shouldn't we, as exercise professionals? So subscapularis, infraspinatus, teres minor, and supraspinatus, we have to know that they are tiny little easily damaged muscles inside the shoulder that hold the big bone in the shallow cavity. So if we're doing anything to hurt that joint, so we're putting shearing forces across the joint, we're going to get a shoulder injury. It might not be straight away, but it's going to happen. The interesting thing about injury, however, is if somebody has a job, a sport, a lifestyle where they're already putting shearing forces across any of their joints, so their lifestyle has already put them into a risky position, they might come to you for the first time. And can you imagine how that would feel? Where the very first time somebody exercises with you, they blow out a shoulder or a lower back or a knee or an elbow because that the exercise that you gave them, so it might be a bicep curl or an upright row or a leg extension or a leg curl or a tricep extension, that one time blows out their joint because their joint was already open for injury, at risk of injury, was already broken. And the first time they train with you, you break it. Can you imagine how that would feel? And then the long-term effect of that, somebody might come to you and their joints are perfectly healthy, but because you keep giving them shearing forces and even worse with rotation, that was the challenge that perforated my disc, was doing sit-ups with a twist. So I'm getting shearing forces across my L4, L5 from doing sit-ups, but then doing them with the twist gives me shearing forces with rotation. So it's twist and grind, twist and grind, twist and grind, and we wonder why joints waste away. So what if we just did the functional thing, the sensible thing, the logical thing? Exercise the human body in the upright position. It's the way we're designed. We burn more calories, we use more muscles. We can do more activities in the upright position, we can do them more effectively. And then anything we do in the upright position, let's have a look at what's happening to each of the joints. So if you start at the neck, the shoulders, the elbow, the wrists, even the fingers, because who wants to have sore fingers? And if you're as old as I am, some people call it arthritis. At our house, we call it disciplinitis. For Cayman and I, it's been from doing too many exercises over and over for such a long time because we didn't understand for quite a while. Well, I certainly didn't understand for a long time how stupid some exercises are. So the joints of the body need to be protected because if the joint's broken, you can't work the muscles. And if you can't work the muscles, you can't keep the metabolism fast. You can't do all the things that you want to do, whether it's just recreational or for your training. And most importantly, obviously, exercise helps us with our mental health and our strong brain and our even smart brain. Because when you're pumping brain-derived neurotrophic factor into your brain, fertilizer for your brain, which comes from puffing really hard and lifting really heavy, doing intense activity, you then become a person who's not just happier and more self-confident and you feel good about yourself, but you also have a brain that works so much better. So you actually become smarter when you exercise. You have neurogenesis, grow new brain cells, neuroplasticity, where you change the way your brain thinks. So that's a beautiful thing about exercise. If you do stuff that you didn't think you could do, your brain now knows that you can do it, so it changes the way that it thinks. If you overload your muscles and bones, you also overload your brain, and your brain gets tougher and stronger and wiser and smarter. I think that's bloody great. So how do I analyze an exercise? How about we keep everybody in the upright position? How about we get people puffed so they get fit? How about when we overload a muscle, we make sure that the joint being used or all the joints being used have compression forces, not shearing forces? And that's one of the beautiful things about if you work as many muscles as you possibly can at the same time, big exercise, big results. Big exercise, safer. It seems to be those little tiny isolation exercises that give us those shearing forces across our joints, and they don't work that well anyway. Yes, they work the muscle, but one muscle at a time is a very ineffective way to work the body. Does very little for the central nervous system, very little for the endocrine system. If you want big results, should you do big exercises? And the big exercises are the ones that are multi-jointed, multi-muscles. So as many muscles as you possibly can at the same time, safely moving the body through a functional manner, so there's no shearing forces across the joints, no rotational forces across the joints, so your body gets really fit and really strong. And here's the question: if you're really fit and if you're really strong, can you then go and play sport, climb mountains, dance for hours, do all the physical activities that you want to do, and then solve all the big challenges and be really effective at your job or at anything that you want to do because your brain's working more effectively as well? Exercise. As the medical professionals say, exercise is medicine, medicine is exercise. And if I've got a fit, strong body, what can I do? How much better will my life be? So how about we keep the body fit and strong by working it in the most safest, effective, functional, fastest way possible? And if you use as many muscles as possible at the same time, it makes your workout so much shorter. And is it possible that if we keep workouts short, people are more likely to stick to them for the rest of their lives? And wouldn't that be great? Healthy, fit, and strong for the rest of your life. Woohoo!